Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt. It is November the 23rd, 2006. Tonight, I'm bowing to a little bit of pressure. I don't normally bow to any kind of pressure, but this will tie in with some of the talks I've given in the past. And it's about the culture creation industry, how ideas are downloaded into people's minds via fiction primarily, using high drama with emotion, emotion plus crisis, a situation in a movie and drama, is a tremendous method of getting points across. It's almost like coupling an idea with the drama, and it's downloaded like a virus into your subconscious, and you're being programmed, and it's called predictive programming. The technique is ancient, and it's an old science. Plato, in his Republic, talks about the culture industry of his own day, and how it was essential not only for maintaining control over the people by the elite, but that they had to control everything that was given to the public. In other words, anything the public saw in drama on stage was authorized. Not only was it authorized, in ancient Greece, traveling troops of players would come into the cities and do their rounds, and it was compulsory to attend. Everyone, even the slaves, had to attend at least one performance. Because, just like today, they had their agenda and their schedule and their upgrading of the system. And it was done primarily through fiction, because the old saying is, monkey see, monkey do. And we emulate what we see, especially when it's done in a typical hero and heroine form. The male will project himself into the hero's part and identify with the hero character, and the female, at least in the old days, before all the vast estrogen stuff in their food and so on, and inoculations, the females used to look towards the heroine. This is an ancient science. It's never, ever given up. And actors are hereditary. The families in acting can go back probably hundreds, maybe some of them maybe thousands of years. Specialized sections of society, once more, and they marry each other and intermarry within even smaller ranks. What's more interesting is the producers, the magicians, you might say, who understand and have a full grasp of what is to be conveyed to the audience, what messages must be imprinted in them, in their minds, and he knows the techniques and how to do this perfectly, a perfect science. Now, what's interesting is that back in the 1960s, the Royal Institute of International Affairs and its American branch, Council on Foreign Relations, had one of their international meetings. They held it in England to decide which country, using its film industry, would create the international culture of the future. And this was in the newspapers back then. And it was, two or three week long meeting. And it was ultimately agreed upon that Hollywood would be given the job to create the worldwide culture for the general public, for a global society. And it would also be coupled with the music industry, obviously, because they go hand in glove, as Plato said, plus the fashion industry. Plato mentioned that too, and he called it the fashion industry in ancient Greece. Nothing. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And if something works, you don't want to change it. Why change it? Formula of human behavior is just a science. Each part of the direction that you want to go into is just the ability to understand the formulas involved and then what buttons to push and what sequence. And it is done in the right way, the right presentation, with the right propaganda, the public will react and do exactly as they're being programmed to do. It's worked in the past, it will work in the future. That's why they're utterly confident that they can change society, even back to infanticide if they wish to, because they'd done that in ancient Greece. It was taught and practiced there. So anything can be reintroduced if it's been done in human society before. You just have to know the formula to introduce it.
They're gonna put me in the movies. They're gonna make a big star out of me. We'll make a film about a man that's sad and lonely. And all I gotta do is act naturally. Well, I'll bet you I'm gonna be a big star. Might win an Oscar, you can't never tell. The movie's gonna make me a big star, 'cause I can play the part so well. Well, I hope you come to see me in the movie. Then I know that you will plainly see. Biggest fool that's ever hit the big time. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
So Hollywood, this amazing industry, probably one of the biggest exports now, maybe the only one left in the U.S. apart from the military. Hollywood is called the Hollywood, Hollywood. It's the Hollywood, of course, is the staff of the Magi, of the Magus, the Grand Magus in the occult. He waves a wand and everything is altered, changed. He casts a spell. And it's portrayed even in the cartoons with Mickey Mouse with his little wand. He's dressed like the wizard. And little stars, five-pointed stars, come from the wand. Earth, air, fire, water, spirit, the 5 points. That's what it means. High drama. And in the ancient Middle Eastern legends, all the holy men there had their staff. We even find it in the Old Testament, as the Moses has the little contest with the Pharaoh's Magi, and they play it changing sticks into snakes and back again, which is a good trick. But the trick of conducting a spell over the audience is by using a staff, the holy wood. The holy wood also, on another level, is the grove, because in ancient times and in the present times, the bigger boys like to meet in specialized places across the planet in their holy groves. Very, very important. There's much more to this even in Jewish folklore about the groves. And Moses' brass serpent that was coiled around the staff that had made, it's all allegory, of course, for something else, which I understand, but supposedly it was placed in a grove surrounded by trees, and that was a special place for the higher magi to meet. I'll be going into some movies that will show you the understanding within Hollywood, at least in the director's part. Many of the actors don't even understand it themselves, but the directors and producers certainly do. And some of the bigger ones are given the information and their advice on how to get it across to the public. It's not that they have geniuses within Hollywood, per se, it's that they have special insight through a crystal ball into the future, is because their job is to program us as we go into the future, always. Hollywood has been an essential part of government, especially in the United States. There are books out on Hollywood's involvement with making war movies. They churned out I don't know how many war movies in World War II, and they had the full cooperation of the American military and the use of squadrons of tanks and ships and everything to make it very, very realistic to get the recruitment going to fight the Nazis and then the Japanese. Tremendous part of propaganda, and it's never stopped, and even today the Pentagon admits they have funded some of the bigger movies to do with war and Jarhead and all this kind of nonsense to get the young guys in, recruits. Now, just jumping back a little bit into the 1500s, a period of tremendous change in Europe when the Rosicrucians were coming out into the open and recruiting heavily amongst what was then the up-and-coming middle-class youth, especially those involved in sciences. Science is very important to them. And a whole bunch of characters were around the court of Queen Elizabeth I, very important people in an important age. You can find John Dee there. Flood was there as well. And Flood is the man primarily responsible for the creation of the Globe Theatre, which was for Shakespearean plays. And nothing is by accident. And Robert Flood was also an alchemist. He was involved in architecture in the Hermetic tradition, which means that they wanted to unite heaven and earth. Always the same Hermetic tradition, the unification of both spirit and matter, the perfection of the world. In their eyes, of course, they knew and always did know that the understanding was for those in the know, for the profane and for the masses. They would simply be slaves. They had no qualms about differentiating themselves as a higher class of people, a specialized type, intellectual type. And Stratford-upon-Avon, if you break it down, it means a straight ford upon Avon, the river. And a ford is to cross a river. And if you draw it, you have the shape of a cross. And they always say you meet the devil at the crossroads. Avon is Nova, new. So it's the new straight cross. That's what it meant. And Shakespeare, or Jacques Pierre, the priest and of the father, was the magician who brought basically the English language into being as we know it. It's been upgraded since, but that was a major upgrade in that particular period. Before that, it was Chaucer had upgraded the last one with Canterbury Tales and other writings, and before that, it was Old Norse and Saxon German that the people spoke. So a new language was created scientifically. It's fully encoded, of course. And it's a pity as well, because we've lost so much of it. We're losing so many words that eventually we won't be able to convey anything to anyone else with any precision. And that's called linguistic minimalism, a technique which has also been used on the public, because the children, for a long time, for generations, have been getting their vocabulary from the media and from their music and the heroes that they follow. God help us if we all end up following the sports teams members, because if you want linguistic minimalism, when they interview these players after a match, you've got it right there. So the 1500s was a tremendously important time. It was also, as I say, the introduction of the Hermetic thought, the perfection of man, which means more than just a superficial perfection. They're talking about going all the way into the real religion, which is to recreate that which was separated from God. And that goes back to the allegory of Adam and Eve. Because in the separation, Adam retained the spirit that was given, whereas Eve was given the ability to recreate humanity, to give humanity offspring. And that's the big secret in Masonry. And that's why they don't really appreciate women so much. They have no spirit. And Albert Pike said that the woman can only reflect the light of her husband. He is the sun, she's the moon. The moon has no light of its own, it reflects light from the sun. This is all they put down of the female. And their perfection would be when they united the two together. It's an ancient, ancient religion. It's pre-Judaic. And I've never lost sight of this goal, where everything will be in harmony, supposedly, again, according to them. But then they do give you their ending at the beginning. That's the trick of religion, to give you a beginning, which really is their end. Getting back to the 1500s, Queen Elizabeth the First sponsored these Rosicrucians to write plays, and she attended most of them herself. And Christopher Marlowe was probably the odd man out, because he wrote about this Hermetic group who were bringing the occult into their stage plays. And because of that, he exposed too much. It's debatable if he was one of them himself and said too much, or if he was actually truly opposing them. But he was like Dagobert long before him. He was stabbed through the eye, which is the Masonic technique for one who sees too much. There is so much I could go into, and it's a shame in a sense to do this as a spontaneous blurb off the top of my head, but at the moment time is of the essence, and so everything is pretty well spontaneous. So what I'll concentrate on tonight are a few movies which have been very telling in their information and their understanding of the system. And also, as always, you have your predictive programming, because in the revelation of the method in high esoteric circles, you can also put in there an idea of inevitability as well. It familiarizes us with an idea so that when it actually comes into place, we accept it without question as somehow being normal. I'd like to talk about the movie called Network, which came out in 1976. A story about a guy working as a TV anchorman who gets a kind of messianic brainstorm one day and starts telling the truth to the public. And one of his statements is, you're the real people to the audience. We're fake. When he realizes that the audience are trying to emulate a fiction, because everything you see on television is a fiction. It's directed, it's produced, it's not spontaneous. Guests, when they're on a question-answer show of any kind, have the pre-planned questions there. I watched a little blurb about Kissinger and found out when he came to Canada that his the guy who manages Kissinger, and they're all managed too, had put a suggested set of questions that they could ask Kissinger, and anything not on that list would simply not be answered, and or they can walk off the set. There's nothing spontaneous on television. Everything is produced as fake. It's fake. It's an essential arm of controlling your mind. Always has been. But in the movie Network, as he has these convulsive fits and he comes out with his messianic announcements in a comical fashion, he says a lot of truth, and eventually he's called up to see one of the big boys, one of the big guys who run the system, who runs it, and the guy tells him, he says, that there is no America. He says, everything is just one vast corporation, an association of corporations. There's no Britain, there's no America, there's no Holland, there's no China, there's no Russia. It's just one conglomerate group of corporations. Money runs the thing. And that was true, that is true, because that's how it is. The economy, everything beginning with E in our language, is of prime importance. Prime importance is at the top. And that's well worth a look at, the Network and what they disclose there to a public that just chew bubblegum and pop their popcorn and get downloaded and yet can't even remember what they see or do. The second movie is pretty famous in some circles. It's called They Live, done in 1988, where it does show you the system, again, in allegorical type form. They do it blatantly and show you the sort of mind control techniques of advertising, the types of people who live amongst you, who look like you, but they're not you at all. In the real world, you'll find that in Freemasonry, because there is a definite feedback from along through Masonry of information to do with the public and places they live in. They collect data on everyone. And the Eastern Star is famous for that. They collect data. And I do know someone who's confronted a high-ranking member of the Eastern Star, and she did admit that. And I do know that in a place I used to live, the Grand Master at the local lodge there were around all these elderly women who were Eastern Star members, and he collected the data, the what's what on everybody, the gossip. So it's well worth a look at how They Live, done in allegorical form. They have the alien twist in it, of course, which is highly popularized by the authorized guys in some countries. I was asked to do a documentary by one of these well-known guys. But then when he found out I wouldn't push the alien agenda, that's the last I heard from him. He phoned me, by the way. Third movie is The Original Wicker Man, made in 1974. Very revealing movie on the religion that runs the world, with an outward form of nature worship, but also with an elite group at the top who play with people. And that's a very key part of it. They play with people as though they were bored. They know how we think. And in The Wicker Man, a policeman is sent from his little area in Scotland to an island off the west coast of Scotland, supposedly, to investigate a missing girl. And he's been actually lured there. And the whole movie is about how he's played with and how he comes across clues that are left out for him to pick up, knowing with each clue how his mind will work to the next part, and the next part, and the next part, to the very end, where he has become the willing fool for the sacrifice. He was a king's representative, so he was important. He came willingly, very important too. He was a virgin, very unique these days. But what was kind of funny to me was to see how they put a policeman there. Now, most policemen are pretty well Freemasons because it's almost mandatory to become a Freemason when you join the police force, the fraternity, the brotherhood of the police. And anyone who's visited policemen's homes will see their photograph of the person with their police cadet uniform on at graduation, and next to it is the Masonic one with their gloves and all the rest of it. Because they must swear allegiance first to each other before they swear allegiance to serve you. They don't serve you, they serve the elite who employ them. Protect and serve. But in The Wicker Man, he has the policeman has the proper British type and some the British Commonwealth country type hat on. And round the hat's a band of black and white squares. It's a chessboard, it's a tesserated floor of Freemasonry as well. It's the two opposites. It's also the heaven and hell. They have the right to use the black force when necessary. And that's why they stand up for each other as well and often change their little books and their stories to justify what they're doing. So that was the only part that didn't make sense, of course, but it takes someone to understand that, to see that. But well worth the look at is The Wicker Man, the original one, made in 1974. I believe there's a later one out, which is going right off the wall, where there's some sort of monster involved. Another movie to see, which I didn't know was even out there, came out in 2003. Not publicized, just like The Wicker Man, was a movie called Control Factor. Excellent movie, which has a lot of fact in there to do with mind control, using microwave frequencies and the little microwave towers all around cities to control the minds of the public, but also a specialized secretive group of scientists with full authority using advanced types of weaponry who go in and chip the brains of certain individuals within the cities. They actually use in the Control Factor real data that's been disclosed to the public from books such as Zbigniew Brzezinski, Between Two Ages and the Technotronic Era. And they use the terms technotronic, etc. And everything in that movie can be done today. Actually, it's old stuff. Whatever is disclosed to the public is actually obsolete, in a sense. They're so far beyond because they have three levels of science. And from professorship down, that's all the public domain. That's the lowest level. The CIA on the higher levels, compartmentalized levels, the higher levels, they have equipment which would is beyond science fiction. And there's a higher level above that for the real controllers, because you never share ultimate power with the rest who help you. So Control Factor 2003 has even been shown across European countries, and as I say, I never heard of it here until someone in Belgium brought it to my attention. Well worth seeing. Another one to look at is from Germany, but it's available in the stores over here for rent, made in 2002, and it's called The Experiment, with English subtitles. Excellent movie on a topic I've mentioned before, how people become what they work at, like Mr. Postman and Mr. Policeman and Mr. Soldier and this kind of thing. But The Experiment, and these experiments have been done many times over, I'm sure. It takes place in a mock prison, and a whole group of people come in. I think there's 20 of them. 10 are dressed up as the prison wardens, 10 as the prisoners. And in a short space of time, the control freaks within the Warden Society begin to become the wardens and use the same techniques and measures against the prisoners. And in no time at all, you've got a real situation going. It shows you, it's a very good expose on how easily people are persuaded and controlled and indoctrinated to become that which their masters want them to be. One of the most commonly talked about movies to do with oh, the scary stuff, oh, children, I want to drink your blood, is As Eyes Wide Shut, done in 1999. Very well done. Done by Stanley Kubrick, who was high up there in the high Freemasonry. He did 2001 and 2010 for Arthur C. Clarke, so he understood the agenda. He died just after the movie. Some say that he went too far with the movie. Again, that could be speculation. And yet you watch it and follow it to understand what's going on. And even then, take note of the street names and all of the names you hear in that movie. And pronounce them backwards and forwards and so on. There's a lot more in it than most people ever imagine. You'll see that the type of ceremony they'll have at the top where do what thou wilt is the whole of the law. With this mass promiscuity within these secret meetings, orgies, you might say. And masked as always, they love the masks at the top. And the masks are the ones of ancient Egypt, the hermetical sciences again, with the jackal head and various other heads on different people. You'll see Thoth in there. Sometimes it's called Thoth or Thoth of Egypt, and the simple secret behind Thoth, who brought writing and mathematics and all this to society, is not a person or a thing, it's thought. That's where the word comes from, thought. Most people never do it, never use their own thought. But Eyes Wide Shut shows you again, similar to The Wicker Man, how an elite play with one character right through the whole movie. And his character has no idea he's been led along. He's coming to the conclusions they want him to come to. He goes places to find out what the mystery is. And they always know he's going to go there. They, in a sense, lead him on the whole way, right through the whole movie. And they kill people in the movie just because to them it's a game, it's nothing. They're untouchable by society. There's no police going to come after them. No inquiry. Well, we're seeing. And these groups do exist. Another good one to see is called THX 1138. And this is a speculation on a society which is totally controlled and bred for their purposes. And they live underground. They never get to the surface, but they work at the jobs that's dictated for them. They're drugged all day, they're tested, their urine's tested to make sure they have enough of this or that drug. They have speakers that talk to them, tell them what drugs to take, or take more of this, etc. A totally regulated system where they're never fully, fully conscious. They have no sense, really, of individuality in this movie. A comical part is where they even have a computer screen where you can go in and make confession. And a picture of a priest comes on and you tell him all your little thoughts, and of course it's going right to the controllers at the top. Well, what's new, eh? But well worth seeing. Another good one is Logan's Run. And that was made as far back as 1975 with Michael York. And again, an artificially created society where no one grows past the age of, I don't know if it was 29 or 30. And when they get to that age, a little implanted chip starts to glow in the palm of their hand. And they go into a sort of circus where everyone comes around in an arena. An arena just comes from the word Aaron, high priest. And they sit there and they watch what they think is a religious experience where these people are going to the next life. And in reality, they've been killed off. And the whole system is run by computers. That was the way of taking care of their population problem. There are no old people in the movie, interestingly enough. Christopher Walken has been in some interesting movies. I think one of them, back as far back as 1972, was first called The Happiness Cage. And then it came out under The Mind Snatchers, where he's a soldier who causes trouble, young and cocky in the military, and he's taken off for medical experiments. And the whole movie is about him figuring out what's happening, and it's very Tavistock in its setup. And they did have, and they do have, these institutions, by the way. And the whole idea is to implant you with a form of chip and control you remotely. Now, they've done that in Tavistock, as Aldous Huxley talked about on his talk at Berkeley, which is on this website. And Huxley, this great winner, thought this was fantastic, a great improvement in society, sticking wires in their head and punching buttons and getting them to move like robots. So that was in that particular movie, The Mind Snatchers. Walken was also in another one put out in 83, and it was called Brainstorm, where he's a scientist involved in making a machine or a head, a form of headgear that would interface with computers and be able to transmit people's minds across distances and be picked up again by other computers. This isn't fantasy either. These things actually do exist. It's always used eventually, even in the movie, for military purposes. But it's well worth looking at this movie to see how far back they were showing the public this kind of thing. And as I say, it's a form of telling you in a legalistic sense what's coming, but it's also a form of programming you to simply accept it when it really comes into reality. Predictive programming. We don't question things when we're sort of kind of vaguely familiar with the idea, the concept of it. And the scientists will come out on television and tell you, well, that's progress, you see. Well, who defines what progress is? It's not us. But then we don't have a say in anything at all. And that's a fact. There is no democracy. There never was. It was only the agenda. Now, at Loyola University in Louisiana, they've had a couple of meetings there, the World Science meetings, paid for by the U.S. Department of Commerce, to do with chipping the entire population of the planet, except for the elite, of course. And they've put out hundreds of pages on this, putting chips in the brains of people will give peace to the world, and regionalized computers would eventually control people and program them for their jobs, so you can be a plumber one day and an electrician the other. It won't matter to you because you won't even know or remember it, and you will not have any individuality. The ghost in the machine won't be able to connect anymore. And at the first meeting they had, they said that this agenda would be promoted to the public to familiarize them with the idea through novels, through cartoons, movies, etc. Well, that's already been done. there are movies out now under different guises, bringing it into us in different fashions, different ways, but always the same conclusion. And it wasn't long after the first meeting that Final Cut, the movie with Robert Williams, 2004, that came out, and other ones have followed suit. Just to get used to an idea of having something in you which could monitor your activities like a camera, your thoughts like a camera, what you see like a camera, what you hear, and play it back after you're deceased to anyone who wants to hear it. That'll be a great boon for the police too, eh? They won't have to ask you questions about anything, they'll just have to tap into your chip. The cartoons have heroes with them, with chips now, with superpowers. That's how they'll sell it to the young. Now, at these meetings, they never, ever discussed politics. They didn't even mention governments, because these characters, these high scientists, know that these are just a show for the public. They work for the real boys. So they speak with authority when they speak. And they said this will be promoted through these methods. Cartoons, movies, etc. And novels. And it's quite easy to do when you look at especially cultural organizations. Interestingly enough, in the Soviet system, they had a department of culture. The government had a department of culture. And when I was growing up, I realized we have one in Britain too. And Canada's got a Department of Culture. Well, why would you need that? Well, you need it because their job is to dish out money to certain authors, often with instructions, to build stories around particular ideas. That's how it's done. That's how you guide culture. You can't have any old guy coming along with a story, not on the script, not on the format, and doing his thing, and everybody loving it. So that everything's done by grants within the arts industry. And high masonry, of course. A good mason never asks why anything. He immediately must obey the order from a superior. And that's how they get ahead in life. All politicians do it. They don't think for a second. They don't guess what's going on. It doesn't twig eventually what's going on. They clue in not to ask questions. You're a good boy if you don't ask questions. You just obey. That's how the whole structure works. So check out Final Cut and other ones. Some of them are pretty awful and third rate, but I'm sure they'll put more money into it as they really try to familiarize us with the idea. They haven't yet, I don't think, put out movies where a child is found with who's been kidnapped because they have a chip. I'm surprised that these things on these TV dramas they have. There's nothing on television anymore except sports, TV dramas, lawyer dramas, and hospital dramas. The main areas of control in you see, medicine, law, etc. So. So I'm surprised they haven't put a movie out with some little cutie is kidnapped and everybody's biting their nails wondering what's happening, and here's the guys with their, you know, all their test tubes and DNA samples and their little tracker for the chip, and they find them at the end, and Bruce Willis or some will get the big part, and he'll go and storm there like Rambo and rescue them at the end, and they'll thank the scientists that designed it and all that. That will come if it's not out already. And one really, really good movie which makes you think. You see, some movies make you think. Most don't. You get downloaded through emotion. They call it emotive responses, emotive indoctrinations. But in Devil's Advocate, the movie shows you the nature of man. And there's a lot of good quips in there where the devil, who has the biggest law firm in New York, talks to a guy who doesn't know that he's actually the son of the devil, who's been trained to take over. And he tells him how they're taking over, how they're taking the world over. He said, is by turning out armies of lawyers. Millions of them. Millions and millions of lawyers. The through law that you're manacled and you can't move and you can't speak. It's all through law. Law is a wall around your mind. These are a few movies to look at more carefully. Those who have seen them, perhaps you look at them more carefully than you did before. Tremendously revealing, because there's always the revelation of the method for those who are wise enough to see and hear it. There is always, always an expose of how it's done and why it's done for those who can hear and see. It's like the Globe Theatre, as I say, that built for Shakespeare, the Shakespearean plays. It wasn't called the Globe for nothing. The Globe, the world. Where the stage went down into the audience. And in those days, they brought in audience participation. They made you involved, get involved in the story. And many people got carried away with the drama and thought it was all real. And when that happens, the actors know they're convincing, it's working. When the audience forgets they're watching a fake, they're watching an act, then the actors are doing their job and it's getting across to the people that are convinced, because now you've inserted into their minds the possibility that whatever you're showing them can be real or is real. And you've actually changed them, the alchemical change. You've changed them. You've cast a spell upon them. That's how it's done. In the esoteric traditions, the stage became a microcosm of the macrocosm, where all knowledge, which is true, is stored within the person. But it's also, the person is a miniature of the entire universe. Everything that's out there is contained within. That's part of the religion of the esoteric occultic groups at the top. A play itself could be called a talisman in a sense. A talismanic microcosm. They could actually use theatrical effects, even in Shakespeare's time, for thunder. Many, many different kinds of stage effects were very, very convincing. They even had the Burning of Troy, a large play, a huge play, performed there, and the conflagration of Rome. And had dozens and dozens of altars all around the stages for the burning of apparently the sacrifices. Nothing was spared in the effects of the period to cast a spell upon the public. Now, the public always think they're simply going to be entertained for fun, to enjoy themselves, and often they are. But they never realize that their way is being shaped for them, that their thinking is actually being shaped for them. They're looking into an area which is where they'd never have gone themselves in their own lives. But it's being presented to them, and they participate in the play, in a sense. Now, at one time, the magus, as they call them, the magician, in the Rosicrucian Masonic tradition, was on a personal quest for understanding themselves in relation to the macrocosm. And it was in the same period that a split took place in the 1500s, where certain of their members became politicized and wanted to control the entire population of the world. That was their intention eventually, was to control and recreate, remake everything that was left imperfect. That's what they say. Everything that was left imperfect because no true thought went into the design of the world. It was a spontaneous act of bringing into existence. And they believed that as they attained godhood themselves individually, they had the right, therefore, to remake the world as it should be. This has never ceased, this particular ideology, and the elite are following it still. That means everything. That's why you're seeing all the modified food, apart to dumb the public down, of course, and to kill you off quicker, which it will, definitely will, population control. But they want to modify everything on the planet, perfect it. Now, this was shown in their architecture of the layouts of their buildings, the 15, 16, 1700s into the 1800s. You can see some of the big estates even today that are left over. And look at the shapes of their gardens, how they're laid out in geometrical patterns, the reflection of the macrocosm into the microcosm and vice versa. It was to create the harmony, and that's their terminology, between heaven and earth. Harmony. They put great faith in doing this. That you will see it's a much older tradition than simply from the 1500s. You will see it in the big cathedrals that were built in the early 11th century onwards. You'll see the tremendously domed ceilings, and the acoustics are incredible. The mathematical work that went into making all of these interlacing domes and almost what they were doing by using the huge beams and shaping them into points at the top as they all met, the arches inside the churches, was trying to recreate nature. They all represented the trees and the boughs all coming together. This is what you're seeing, although you're not generally aware of it, a more perfected form of nature. That's what it's all about. And inheritors of these sciences are still working at it today, unbeknownst to the public. And they have total control of the one thing which makes the world go around. It's called money. Now, what was here before, the idea or money, or did they come together with the same idea? Well, you can bet your bottom dollar, because you can go back to ancient times and find out that this mystery religion was on the go thousands of years ago and using money to get its way and conquering people and forcing them to use money to get them in the system. Once you have it all done worldwide, it is your system. Everyone's trained to earn money. And above everything in this system is the system called economics. Is it there to serve us, or are we there to serve it? Well, the latter is true, according to the economists. The suffering that goes along with it is irrelevant. It's just a side effect of it. You can't help that, you see. That's what they say. We're run by a system, an occultic system, by sciences which are still passed on through certain families and through archives, the real histories and the methodologies, the science of how our minds work and how our minds can be manipulated throughout our whole lives. A science kept to a few that put Freud in the kindergarten category. And one can only read the ancient Greek philosophers to get a whiff of that, because They were way, way beyond Freud with their techniques. As I say, this is a big, big topic to go into, and I'd rather have done a worked out series rather than just a spontaneous blurb. But there are so many things to do at the moment, so many things to be done, and time is getting short for everyone as we race along to totalitarianism, which is all around us now, at least in law, and the mechanisms to enforce it are all up and ready. It's not a pretty thing to contemplate, but we must look at what is there in order to come through. And in all ages, there have been a few who come through, a few with memory. And memory is very important. Very important. Good night from me. I'm a dog, Hamish. And may your God, or your dog, go with you.
You ought to be in pictures. Gee, you're beautiful to see. Say, you ought to be in pictures. Oh, what a hit you would be. Your voice would thrill the nation. Your looks would be adored. You'd be a big sensation. With wealth and fame, your reward. And if you should kiss the way we kiss when we are all alone, you'd have every girl and man a fan worshipping at your throne. You ought to shine as brightly as Jupiter and Mars. Say you ought to be in pictures, my star of stars. Thank you.